Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello and welcome to the Driving More Show. Hi, I'm Paul and I'll be your host this evening. It looks like it's going to be a bit of a solo show, folks. So when it goes quiet, that's because I'm having a beer and wetting the throat, because otherwise it's a lot of talking doing it on your own for an hour or ish, if we get that far, let's be honest. What's on the cards for tonight? Well, we have had Farrah Palmer Cup. We've also had action in the NPC. I was at Bay of Plenty for Bay of Plenty versus Canterbury in the Farrah Palmer Cup at the end of the Premiership round robin. On the Championship side, they had their quarterfinals at the weekend. We'll have to have a chat about those games. Also, I saw Bay of Plenty versus Counties as well. So I was at those games, and interviews from those games will be coming up during the show. So look out for those, including talking to a Blackburn as well. We've had international rugby action in both the women's and the men's side. So obviously we'll have a chat about those. A bit of a roller coaster it's been for All Blacks fans, let's be honest. And plenty of questions and plenty of records set at the weekend. So we'll go through all of that kind of stuff. Let's kick off on the women's side of things with the Farrah Palmer Cup. It was quarterfinal time in the championship, which saw Tasman get downed 20-31 by North Harbour. I remember I was at North Harbour the other weekend and brought you some interviews from that. Obviously, you can check those out on the New Zealand Sport Radio Facebook page as well. So North Harbour will be facing Northland, who beat Taranaki 31-2. We'll make it through the quarter, the semi-finals. And Northland beats Taranaki 31-19, which means that Hawke's Bay will host Northland, having had that weekend off, and Otago will host North Harbour in those championship semi-finals. So in all honesty, Otago and Hawke's Bay should come through those, and we'll see them in the final. They've had a weekend off. They've also been at the top sides, let's be honest, down there in the championship. The Premiership, as I say, finished off its round robin there. Counties lost to Waikato 12-32. Waikato really showing that they are the second best team in this competition, or challenging the best team in Canterbury. In this one, as Counties finished down in sixth place. Manawa 2 had the weekend off. They'd already finished all their games. They were going to finish last. There wasn't really much in it, really, or much jeopardy in it for four Counties. Auckland beat Wellington in a close game at 26-25. And then the game that I saw, Bay of Plenty versus Canterbury, 31-33. Now, Bay of Plenty kicked off the season with two wins, but then been on a run of four losses. So really, in this one, They gave up an interception try early on, which meant that Canterbury jumped out to a bit of a lead and had a two-score lead at half-time. But Bay of Plenty came back and could have drawn it with the last kick of the game, but the conversion didn't go over. So a cracking comeback by Bay of Plenty against Canterbury, who with six wins from six have proven to be the team of the tournament and go in as top seeds to the finals series. Let's hear from Kelsey Wells, ex-beach volleyball player who is now a Blackfern Lock, or has been Blackfern Lock, not in the side currently, but she was captain for the day with Luke O'Connor, the Norm Bay of Plenty captain, away with the Blackferns. So let's listen to her about the season and about the game after I talked to her after the game at the weekend. Here we are after Bay of Plenty versus Canterbury in the Parapalmer Cup with Kelsey, the captain of Bay of Plenty. And look, to let in an intercept try against a team as good as Canterbury early in the game, that's going to make it tough for you girls, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that first half we let them in there a bit, and I'm very proud of the girls, the way we came out that second half and caught up, and we were so close to getting over there again. But unfortunate in the end, pretty gutted, but yeah, I'm proud of our efforts.
Yeah, that second half you came back from a two-score deficit to get within 2 points at the end there. One conversion, and it was a hard kick out there wide on the hoops that could have drawn it. So yeah, very, very good for you girls to, as they come back against the top side. About the season, you started off with a couple of wins. It's been a bit tough since then. Do you think you've been improving towards the end of the season?
Yeah, so bit of a roller coaster for sure. Like last year we started off down and came back up at the end, but opposite this year. And we probably missed our key Black Ferns a bit there. Yep. In the middle of the season, but which gave our younger girls an awesome opportunity for a bit of growth, and which is great leading into next year. So really excited for what's to come.
Hey, talking about growth, I mean, it's been a couple of years now since you've converted over from beach volleyball to now be captaining a side. Do you feel comfortable in the game, that you know enough, and you're happy having the captaincy?
Yeah, I think I know enough rules now, so it's a real honour to be chosen as captain. There's some real great leaders that are very supportive of me out there, so made my job pretty easy. Yeah,
we've got ex Blackferns captains out there with you, helping you along.
So yeah, not bad.
I guess that's that's nice. But yeah, so to get the honour of captain must be very, very cool. Well done for this season. Enjoy the off season, and good luck. Good luck next year, I guess. Cheers. Thank you. So yeah, referring to Les Elder there, who was the ex Blackferns captain, who was on the pitch. As a bit of a roller coaster, she said, compared to last year where they started badly and then got better. This year it's gone the other way. And let's hear from her head coach, who was new in the head coach role this year as well. We are after Bay of Plenty versus Canterbury in the Farapalmer Cup with Brent, the coach of Bay of Plenty. To give up an intercept try early in the game, it was always going to be tough to come back from that, wasn't it, against a quality side like Canterbury?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's just been, you learn a lot from that stuff, you know, eyes up rugby, and Canterbury, they've set the benchmark all season, mate, so you just know what they're going to bring that pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. You must be very happy with the response from the girls in the second half, to be two scores down and to get back to within a kick of drawing it. Was a good performance in that second half.
Absolutely. Like, we've got a young squad this season, and you don't know how to deal with that pressure until you get it firsthand. So they could easily have sort of just fallen away, but I love their attitude. Like, they actually stepped up in their second half. They showed what they were capable of.
Yep. And how do you judge the season then? You start off with two wins. It's been a bit tough. Well, a bit tough since then. So I guess, how do you judge the season for Bay of Plenty this year?
This season, we started off with two good wins, and we were in it for the next two games. And I think the learning for this group, mate, they're young. So our job this season was about creating depth, about giving these young ones game time. And it's, mate, Rome wasn't built in a day, you know, so it's for us, it's you know, it's a long-term plan. It's not just about what happens on the day.
Talking about building depth, normally, obviously, in the MPC are used to not having black all blacks, but in the Farrah Palmer Cup, you normally have your black ferns. How much has that been a disruption, and how has that kind of, I guess, helped and hindered with that depth situation?
Mate, it's a World Cup year. We've got to do what's best for best for our country, first and foremost. For our young ones, great opportunity to play with those girls, and at the same time, they see what the benchmark is like. So I think it's great for the game, and it creates opportunities when they're not there as well.
Well, I would say the Farrah Palmer Cup's a bit of a sprint, and unfortunately the sprint has come to an end. So yeah, time to take a bit of a breath, a bit of relax in the off season before you kick off again. So thank you very much for your time, and good luck next season.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
All the best.
Now, I say it's a bit of a sprint because it's only a six-game regular season. If you don't start well, you're in trouble. Now, clearly, Bay of Plenty did start well with those two wins, but then it all fell away from there. But as you said, they were in it for the next two games. That last game, they only lost by 2 points. So only one game, really, that went away from them. But it meant that they didn't make it into the finals, unfortunately, for them. Really cool to also had a chat with Blair Bax, who's the head coach of Canterbury. He even came over and said hello before this and how I was doing. So it's nice to be remembered from around the traps. But from that last interview, remember that point he made there about Rome not being built in a day and building it? Because we'll come back to that in some of the interviews I had from the MPC, which had a different approach to it, which I thought was interesting. But look, he was only in his first season as head coach for Bay of Plenty, so obviously building on things there, having taken over from Gibb, who has now moved up into the head of high performance for Bay of Plenty. But anyway, let's have a quick listen now from Blair Baxter. We'll talk also here, and you get a bit of a feel about what the coaching setups are like in the Farrah Palmer Cup and how much of a love it is for the Shilton to actually make these games go ahead, because it's not the hyper-professional sort of environment that we see on the men's side. We are after Bay of Plenty versus Canterbury with Blair, the head coach of Canterbury. Obviously, kicking off with an interception try and getting a nice 12-point lead must have been was a good start for the girls.
Yeah, we knew coming up to the Bay we had to start really well, and it was good. There would have been a lot of emotion in that changing room prior to them. There's a couple of loyal party Bay girls playing some pretty cool games, so we mentioned that during the week, and we knew that we needed to start well to sort of take that energy off them, and just by chance we got an intercept, and sometimes that gives you the momentum you need to calm the nerves.
A two-score lead going into half-time, but boy, Bay of Plenty came back in that second half and pushed you all the way. It's some resilience there from both teams, a really good game.
Yeah, the Bay are a very fit, athletic, skillful side, and we were, again, well aware of that. So we knew we had to go 80-odd minutes to be able to put these guys away, and really proud of that. There's lots of young girls getting opportunities with their black friends being away, and a lot of them put their hand up to make a really tough selection discussions leading into the finals footy.
Right, yeah, it's the end of the regular season, 6 from 6. Suggests kind of easy, but four of those games were within a score, so you've not had it all your own way, even though you have had a very good season.
Yeah, 6 from 6, but it all means nothing next week, right? So what you touched on, resilience before, and we're really proud of that. So we've been put under the pressure, and traditionally when Canterbury are in that position, sometimes they don't get the ideal outcome, but to come back and show that resilience, the work ethic, and get the points on the board to produce 5 points has been pretty exceptional. And we know next week, probably against Wellington, that they're a pretty exciting team. They've got some power, they've got some physicality, so we're going to have to prepare really well to get a quality performance against them.
There was obviously Super Rugby Alpaca this year. Did you notice an up in the level of the girls as they came into camp this year with that, and or more excitement around the whole kind of tournament and squad?
100%. We've seen growth not only from Super Opiki, but the Black Ferns having contracted athletes in our program, and we've just seen the bar raise in the premiership across the country, I think, and it's really exciting. It's making it quite challenging for coaches. We're not only talking technique, we're talking tactical ability now, and it's part of the game that's really growing. It's growing fast. It's enjoyable.
I remember a couple of years ago that it was the first time Canterbury had a scrum coach, and I was told that he was actually a volunteer as well. Has the coaching sort of the number of coaches, the coaching resources improved as well? Have you managed to get sort of specialist lineup coaches, specialist scrum coaches to help you and on that side of things?
Yeah, we're all still volunteers. We're not quite there yet, but we're growing with the women's game, and we love it because we love trying to help people be better. We're lucky enough to have Sid Talmadi. He works our set piece, the scrum attack, scrum line out and kick starts, and then we have TC doing an amazing job on attack and backs, and then I pot around and do my best at defence. So it's a well-balanced coaching group, and we have Steph Broomhall as well, and she works really closely with our outside backs and hard on the skill stuff. So being all volunteers, we need lots of people to make the work light, and we're fortunate enough to have some great people around us.
Well, you've done a fantastic job so far this season. Good luck with the finals, and thank you so much for your time yet again for a chat.
Thanks very much for having us.
Cheers.
Well, good evening, Stephen. How are you doing?
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Paul. Sorry, a little bit late, but work was calling this evening. So, but hey, listen, I've made it, even if I am a few minutes late. But I've got to say, I really enjoyed that interview. I don't know whether I enjoyed the interview or the music in the background. Very, very laid back, as Nocturnal Rites has said on the chat. Very cruisy.
Yes, it was. They had a live musician there playing at Tauranga Domain during the break, so it was great to have some live music being played. Not good to have a chat with both head coaches and see, and just you kind of think that they, because we're so used to seeing fully professional coaching setups, that's how it is. If it's kind of on TV, and especially if we hear about the kind of professionalization of First 15, you think anything on TV must have lots and lots of unless have professional coaches who can dedicate their time to it. And as you can hear there, that's not the case in the Farrah Palmer Cup. Still a long way to go on that. But him talking about him sort of tinkering around with on defence, well, considering they've won 6-6, I think he's doing a pretty good job tinkering with that defence there. It was very relaxed and nice of them to spend the time there with that one. But cracking season for Canterbury. Look, their entire front row was away with the Black Ferns for this game, and they still managed to come out with the win. So well done to them, and I'm sure they'll go pretty far in the two games, the finals. I mean, Stephen, Farrah Palmer Cup, it's only six games regular season plus two rounds of finals. Is it really long enough to have a proper competition? I mean, it's kind of you sneeze and you miss it kind of thing.
Yeah, you are dead right when you consider when you sort of consider it to the sort of male form of the game. I just do wonder if probably once again money obviously plays its part, whether they can afford to actually have a couple of rounds as well. Just probably in terms of the quality, it's really going to take a while for this quality to get together. And you know, as you can see, there's still a few unions that haven't got women's teams. You know, I don't think Southland are fielding a women's team, and there's them. I think maybe they're the only union that isn't fielding a women's team, because you've pretty much got everybody across the board. It's probably just still finding its place in these early stages, Paul.
Yeah, it is. I did notice. So one of the things I have set up on Seek is an alert every time there's a rugby job that comes up in New Zealand. And Southland have come on and put on have hired a female female rugby coordinator, so hopefully we'll see Southland step up and also have a Farrah Palmer Cup team as well. And when I talked to Otago last week, was it? I think it was the week before. I did ask them about the fact that they have such a big area. I mean, Southland's not a small province in the best of times. When you've got Otago and Southland covered by one team, it's a lot of work to expect volunteer head coaches to be able to go and find the players and do selection fairly and stuff. So things like that. A couple of comments here about the music and stuff. Yeah, let's hope I don't get copyright taken down because that kind of stuff can happen before. I've had a copyright strike recently because of music in the background while I was doing an interview up in Navigation Home Stadiums. So I'll say, let's hope that doesn't happen this time. Look, clearly, I'm not trying to copyright or use that kind of thing. Nocturnal rights would be nice for a proper tour by the Aussie women, vice versa with provincial games. I think fantastic idea. Yeah, midweek games against provincial sides for the Wallaroos. Cracking idea there, Nocturnal rights. I love that one. It would be good, I think, from both sides there. Simon Hughes talking about the beholden to Sky Sports broadcasting arrangement. I'm not so sure about that. I think it is more about the depth and the number of teams that are available. The Heartland Championship, for example, has what, 8 rounds plus semi-finals and finals. They get 2 more rounds than the women's do, and that's the third level men's, or the equivalent of being sort of what's the word I'm looking for, amateur side of things on there on that one. You're quite right. Southland might not be it's not a small province, but it isn't a very big population. You're quite right on that one. Shark Bane, so coming over from South African here, not enough publicity for the Black Ferns. They don't even have their own YouTube channel or social media pages. They're still governed by the All Blacks. The Black Ferns, to be fair, do have a Facebook page and a Twitter, their own Facebook page and Twitter account as well. So on that one, I think they are, what's the word I am looking for? They do have their own channels, but it doesn't get it as we well have said before. The All Blacks are all that New Zealand rugby cares about. The Maori All Blacks, the Black Ferns, the All Blacks Sevens, the Black Ferns Sevens, the All Blacks 15. Yeah, all good luck getting out there, because it's all about the All Blacks and the sponsorship around that side of things. On there, comment, don't think the interview was long enough for it to get copyrighted. You'll find anything over about 15 seconds for music is long enough for you to get music copyright issues. But as Nocturnal Rights says, that was live jet, that was a live blues jam, so we should be okay on that one. So Stephen, we know that I was at Tauranga Domain for a couple of games. What was your I was at home watching the internationals, which we'll get onto later. What was your weekend of rugby like?
Yeah, best laid plans on Sunday. I was supposed to head it up to Whangarei, but I've got quite a big work week ahead, trying to cram 5 days of work into 3 days, and heading down to Queenstown on early Thursday morning. We've got a conference down there for 4 days, so I had to make an executive decision to put in place what comes first in the basket, so to speak. But I did manage to sit down and watch a lot of rugby. I had a great Saturday afternoon, and you actually needed 2 or 3 screens going at the same time with Farrah Palmer Cup, NPC, and of course international rugby. And it was once again a little bit more of the same on Sunday. And of course the highlight for me was sitting back waiting for the teams from the very nearest regions of New Zealand, North and South, North and playing Southland. So I took on board not just some local rugby, but also some international rugby as well.
Yeah, well, we're off down to Queenstown, Stephen. I hope you're ready to cook your own food, serve your own beers, and clean your own rooms. Apparently, there's no staff down there, so good luck.
I'll live with it. I'll live with it.
Oh dear, absolutely. Shark Bane, he made a ton of money betting on Australia to beat the box. I hope it was not a pretty game. Well, look, if you did make a ton of money on the old TAB or the old bookie at the weekend, head over to patreon.com/NZSportRadio and you can become a supporter of New Zealand Sport Radio and pass some of it our way, so you can help us bring you these shows as we talk about rugby there on that one.
Totally agree. And listen, one of our friends of the show, Bo Arthu, was always posting when it comes to two teams going for head. He'll always say the stats don't lie, and at the moment the stats don't lie, because Australia just seem to have the wood on South Africa at this time. It seems as though Dave Rennie's got the key to unlock the box at this point in time.
He does, but let's just quickly cover off on the women's side of international stuff, and then we'll move over to the men's side of the game. Off the back of beating the Wallaroos 52-5 The Blackfern found it much harder going over in Australia, winning the game 14-22, much closer than I think a lot of us were expecting there. So well done to the Wallaroos, but definitely a bit of inconsistency and an up and down performance from the Black Ferns. Stephen, you've got to say that, still Wayne Smith, his process and things are still betting in. And boy, oh boy, it's not long until the Rugby World Cup, is it?
Oh, I agree, Paul. But I think Wayne Smith will be probably more frustrated with this performance than anything else, because once again, a lot of ball, a lot of field position, but that was sort of, that was also tempered with a lot of mistakes as well, you know, not really identifying the space, and there was plenty of opportunities. And you'd have to say Australia, with very, very little ball, actually looked more fluid when they were actually moving the ball along the back line. But you know, a couple of things that I picked up just in terms of breakdown work. Listen, I think the number six for Australia, who just escapes my mind at the moment, Chancellor, I think she got something like about seven turnover penalties. And I also think that Parry on the other side of the scrum also picked up about four or five. You know, Paul, that's pretty unacceptable, especially when you are going to come up against teams like France and England that are so proficient over the ball. You just can't afford to give away those sort of penalties. And I think they can be thankful that they were up against an Australian side where I think they probably had them at set piece and pretty much tried to bully this Australian side. But I think they left a lot of points out on the paddock, and I really do think the coaching staff will be really disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of work for them to do there. And look, it always was going to be a tall ask to turn things around in such a short amount of time. But so I think it was like five games that they've had. They've thrown in the possibles versus probables in there to get some extra game time. But yeah, not many games for the side before the World Cup. As Simon has said in the live chat, the preparation from the other teams is also underway. Japan bounced back to beat Ireland 29-10. After losing last weekend 22-57. So well done to Japan. Also, Scotland lost to the USA 17-21. USA, one of the stronger women's teams. And Canada beat Wales 31-3. So good win there for Canada in that one, heading up to heading into this Rugby World Cup. A bunch of games this weekend as England and France get their warm-ups underway. As do Italy as well. So a whole bunch of games in the women's side. So the women, the Black Ferns do have one more game against Japan before the Rugby World Cup. So one more fine tune there for them. I did notice that Portia Woodman and also Brenner were at the Bay of Plenty game watching the Farrah Palmer Cup. I think they both left after the Farrah Palmer, didn't stick around for the NPC. But anyway, good to see them there supporting the women. And with the women's with the Sevens Rugby World Cup coming up, you do wonder if how many or if those players will be drafted in to the Black Ferns at the Rugby World Cup. But it's been difficult with changing tactics and processes to draft in players at some the last minute like that. So there we go. That's the sort of the women's side of things covered off on.
Paul, just before we do move on, I suppose the only thing that is a little concerning was the injury to, is it Kerry Simon, the skipper of the Black Ferns, who started at number eight. That injury looked quite serious. I haven't really heard any sort of update to where that is at the moment, but if she is out of the World Cup, that's a real huge loss.
Yep, that would be a big loss. I do know that some of the girls, and especially now with the Farrah Palmer Cup pretty much over, over for some of the teams, just game time for replacements to try and keep fit and ready to come in will be difficult there. Sharp Rain, yeah, Red Rose is a dangerous prospect this year. You would fancy them winning the World Cup, winning the World Cup in New Zealand. Absolutely. Yeah, I think England going as favourites with France as their closest challengers. England France going to be cracking game in that women's rugby, in that Rugby World Cup there in that one. So yeah, let's move on to the men's side of things and cover off on the MPC first. No midweek game last week, but on Friday we had Tasman taking on Canterbury. And boy, oh boy, things have fallen apart for Tasman this year, haven't they? A side that's been at the top, challenging or winning titles recently, lost 20-52 against Canterbury. It's a really tough season for them, and Canterbury continuing on their they've lost one so far, but continuing a good season for them. Waikato beat Manawatu 53-6. I think probably all saw that one coming. Champions from last year against a team that hasn't won anything this year. Really tough season for Manawatu. And it's tough for the players to get the motivation and to keep going when you're losing by that many points each week, isn't it, Stephen?
It's very tough. I was going to say on that first result, Tasman, of course, have been hit hard by injuries. I look back to their 2021 side that played in round 10, and that was a week before they actually played the semi-final last year. And you kind of look at some of the cattle that they're missing. Mitch Hunt at first five, of course, Lester Fire Nuku is on All Black duty at the minute. Andrew Newstub was playing at fullback last year, and you go into the pack, and of course Quinton Strange not there, Tonga Fussy not there. In fact, they've had extra injuries with their front row. And just getting on to Manawatu, well, the news really doesn't get any better as well, because they've lost TK Howden, who's been one of their better players for the rest of the season. So they are going to have to really dig deep, not just to remain competitive, but just to sort of keep their heads up. You know, well, like we said, we've spoken about the Manawatu Turbo, so it really is a struggle for them. The only real good news is they've got their storm week out of the way with, best of luck for them for the rest of the season.
Except when you talk to some of the players and coach, you find out that actually they like storm weeks, because it means they don't have to train. So they'd rather play games than train, but there we go. Coming on to Saturday, we had the Ranfurly Shield game between Hawke's Bay and North Harbour. And boy, oh boy, Hawke's Bay seem to just know how to win it, don't they? 25-23, another one that has been that's really close, that they managed to close out at home. Yeah. Remember, against counties, 33-32. Boy, oh boy, they are holding on to this Ranfurly Shield, but boy, it's by the fingernails, Stephen.
Oh, it is, and you've got to give them their dues. There were sort of times during that particular game, especially when Harbour went out to 23-18, and you just thought to yourself, well, maybe with 10 minutes to go, maybe the Shield is on the way. And then unfortunately Sean Stevenson, who'd been superb, picked up a yellow card, and it was just enough for Hawke's Bay to get that emphasis, go back to their meet and drink, line out, drive, tribe, and try. And of course Lincoln McCutchey kicking the conversion. But for a good part of this game, Harbour were the better team. You know, Bryn Gatlin pulling all the strings on, you know, he really put in a captain's knock, and of course Sean Stevenson very good. And you've got to say the rest of for a good time, the rest of that Hawke's Bay pack, North Harbour pack, stood up very, very strong. But there's something about this Ranfurly Shield, you know, the support rallied in the last 5 minutes from the crowd. You could hear the crowd getting involved, and they found a way to win. I think if you're basically going down there to challenge them, I think you're probably going to need to take a pinch bar, a hammer jack, and a few other tools just to prize that shield away from them, because they really play with a lot of passion. So good luck to any team that's heading down to the Hawke's Bay to have a crack.
So, yeah, so next up, 10th of September, is Southland are the next side to have a crack at that. So I think we can probably see that's Hawke's Bay will be favourites to defend it then as well. The only other game on Saturday was Auckland versus Otago. Auckland winning that one 35-17 there on that one. I'm just quickly checking the results. So it feels like it's been a bit of a roller coaster season for Auckland with them. Yeah, like they lost to Bay of Plenty last time out. Very close, run close by Southland. They have been just doing enough, but it has. It's another team that's not quite perhaps not quite firing on all cylinders yet. Stephen,
not at all. I mean to say they probably haven't really put. It's fair to say they haven't really put an 80-minute performance together, and their style is very much about bullying the opposition up front and grinding them down. I thought in this game, they were pretty well worth their lead, 21-0 at halftime. Probably should have been up by a heck of a lot more. Otago unfortunately couldn't take a trick, made far too many mistakes. But a lot of that was brought about by really, really good line speed by Auckland. In fact, a couple of those early tries pretty much in and around came from line speed pressure. And whilst Otago did score just after scored a very good try just after halftime, Vahakalo going in for the try, you know, once again, they're leaving points out there. Josh Ioane just seems really off his game at the minute, not kicking the goals that count. But Auckland, once again, found their mojo and pretty much went from 26-5 to 35-5, courtesy of a couple of tries to Rayasi and Jordan Traynor. But once again, Auckland kind of let themselves down with two yellow cards in the space of... in fact, they got two yellow cards, which I've never seen before, pretty much at the same time to Connor Vest and Jordan Traynor, and that just gave Otago an opportunity to score a couple of late tries. But all in all, the Southerners were well and truly beaten. You know, they'd be really disappointed with that because they've pulled out a couple of good performances along the way. That win over Tasman, but obviously if we check back. Check back to our notes, Paul. Tasman not in the best of form. But, Auckland, you've got to say, just getting into their stride.
Yep. Sharp Brain asking, can anyone stop Canterbury or can you just give them the trophy? Well, Canterbury lost to Taranaki recently, but somehow Taranaki have not managed to continue that form because they came up against Wellington and lost that one 31-25. So Taranaki, a team that went unbeaten last year, everyone's like, oh, they could have won the overall title if they weren't in the championship last year. This year, just that one win, I think it is, against Canterbury. I mean, you're like, okay, they've won their hardest game of the season so far, and don't seem to be able to win other times. So, they're stuttering. Wellington, they're getting the win. If you're wondering why I'm wearing a Wellington jersey at the moment, that is because I'm on a training course. At the moment for only has sort of business, and the facilitator is a Wellington supporter. He asked me on Friday when I was wearing my Castle one where my Wellington jersey was, so I thought I'd put it on for him today. They should have picked up a red card, but they got to use a yellow card for a shoulder to the head. Boy oh boy, another example of New Zealand refs basically just trying to not give out reds, yeah. and try and devalue any head knocks at all, yeah. Which isn't going to help the All Blacks when they come up against European referees. Well, not against European referees. Playing when there's a European referee there. That's what I meant to say. Oops.
I saw that, and I'm still trying to get my head around how he, wasn't basically given a stronger penalty. As opposed to just a straight penalty, crazy.
Yep. And then Northland versus Southland, as you say, your team there with a coast-to-coast try, cracking try there. Too much for Southland, unsurprisingly, winning 32-19. The Taniwha's going pretty well. Sat third at the moment in the evens pool, three wins and just the one loss. You'll be very happy, sir.
Yeah, no, myself, not just myself, but, you know, obviously their loyal supporters have been waiting and waiting a very long time for this Northland team to actually show something. But, you know, I think there's basically been a few changes in administration, obviously a few changes in and around training ethic, and obviously they went, you know, during the off season they went to market and they bought, you know, they bought pretty wisely, and the players that they actually have bought in are contributing, and what they are showing is they are defensively a very good team. After four rounds, they've only conceded four tries, which is quite amazing for a team that's probably leaked most tries over the last three or four seasons. So yeah, what a turnaround. Going well, but moving on to Saturday, they've got a big test from their Blues one of their franchise partners, Auckland, on Saturday up at Toll Stadium in Whangarei. Unfortunately, I'll have to get to a television set to watch that game, but that'll be another acid test again. But they are showing that they've got a good tough physical forward pack at the minute, so they probably will need the return of Tom Robinson, who's been out for the last two games or so. So hopefully we see him return to the Taniwha on the weekend.
Yep, and I was at say Bay of Plenty for this final one. So Bay of Plenty versus Counties 13-18. Mm-hmm. Going to put Kurt Eklund, my interview with Kurt Eklund up. Boy, oh boy, you can tell he's been in the wars on this one. Kurt Eklund after Bay of Plenty versus Counties. Good to using the camera as a bit of a mirror. It's clearly it was a bit of a battle out there, because a big battle out there with the blood in your face there. It was a hard game for you guys.
Yeah, it's a hard game, eh? Counties are big boys, and you know they like to play pretty physically, so. You know, we wanted to be able to match them today, but obviously we didn't, and they came away with the win.
Yeah, a bit of perhaps discipline being a bit of the issue today, allowing them too many shots at goal.
Yeah, we're our own worst enemies today, I think, and you know, giving away penalties, set piece, and you know, offloads when we didn't need to, and you know, it's a bit of a shame to play the way we did to let them come away with the win, I suppose.
And just a quick word about the fans, because we got a big doubleheader here today, a good crowd, a lot of them sticking around to get your signatures, etc. Must be good to have that kind of support and seeing that alive and kicking in here in the MPC.
Oh, it's awesome, mate.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I love playing at the Domain, and you know, our friends and family and lots of people come out to support us, you know, so it's great, and we're just hoping to be able to give them the result that they wanted to come and see. But no, to be here at home with them supporting us is great.
Yeah, it was sunny day today, but we'll let him go get patched up, because I think you need it. So thank you very much for your time.
Cheers,
and good luck next game.
Cheers, mate. Up the Miners.
Absolutely. And yeah, they're not coming out. Up the Miners is because he's a Waihi boy, which is where I live. And I was wearing my Waihi rugby club hoodie there. But boy, oh boy, yeah. Look, I did offer to say, look, if you don't want to do the interview, I want to go get some fix up you can do. I definitely did not force him into this one because, yeah. But a cracking guy, and always has time for me, which is very nice, very very nice. But boy, oh boy, yeah, he did look a bit bashed up there, Stephen.
What I did like, he referred to the Tauranga Domain as the Domain. I quite like that, and obviously a little bit of a character at the start of the interview, just making sure everything that was in place. But listen, credit to these guys after, you know, coming up and chatting. There's obviously a lot of other commitments, so we appreciate them talking to NZ Sport Radio.
We do, absolutely. Let's hear from his head coach as well, Mike Delaney. And remember, I was talking earlier about how Brent Cowell was talking about sort of building things. It doesn't seem to be the way that Rome wasn't built in the day, and building things. So let's hear what
after Bay of Plenty versus Counties with Mike Delaney, the head coach of Bay of Plenty. Look, a tight game out there today, perhaps one or two kicks either way, and this one was that did decide it in the end.
Yeah, it was a pretty tough game. Not a lot of points scored. Discipline probably hurt us in the end with all those penalties that they put over, but credit to Counties, put us under pressure, couldn't get into our game.
And it's been a bit of an up and down season, and it's your first season as head coach here. How are you finding the step up to be the big man of Bay of Plenty?
That's good. We've got a really good group. Just a shame we couldn't fire today, but you know, it's early days, and I'm sure we can bounce back next week against the Otago and Dunedin.
And look, we have a good crowd out here in the sunshine for both games as well. So you're enjoying the support from the province and how, as I say, how everything sort of the whole place and around this as well.
Yeah, like, it's great. You know, there's great numbers here. You know, we love playing here. It's been it's a great place for us. Unfortunately, couldn't put the performance out that we would have liked to put in front of our fans, but you know, we'll be back. There's a few weeks. We've got consecutive games here, and we'll make this one right.
And so when you talk about wanting to put out what you can do, what are you aiming for the season? What's the goals for the season for Bay of Plenty?
Well, I want to win the comp. You know, you don't play this if you don't want to not win it. So, you know, that's it for us. You know, we've got a new group. We could get some cohesion this season, and keep a squad together and onwards and upwards.
And so it's difficult when you've got, say, new coaching groups and new players as well, to say you're going straight up against some of the teams who are much more settled. That's a bit of an ask, really, isn't it, to say, oh yeah, we're going for the top. Surely, isn't there kind of these sort of building stepping stones?
Oh, you're always building, but you know, we're good to go. Like, we've got the team to do it. There's no excuses around that. We've been together for a while now, and it showed that when we're on, we can play. So no, we're good to go. We should have put this one away, and just that's our goal this year, is to actually come away with some silverware.
Okay, well, that's thank you very much for the chat. And obviously, this was you've had some silverware already with the Chiefs Cup, so you're used to what that is. Mm-hmm. So perhaps there'll be more silverware in the future. We'll see. But thank you for your time, and good luck for the season.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's been perhaps a little bit ambitious there, trying to perhaps, as I say, Rome isn't built in a day. Perhaps need a season or two to build things up. I mean, Clayton talked about making sure he had more players in the national under-20s, because that got them to be Super Rugby players. And then if you had the stats show that if you have Super Rugby players, you do well in Super Rugby. And that's how you do well in NPC. And we saw that, how he grew Bay of Plenty. So, yeah, I think he's been a bit ambitious. Now, I know they always talk about that, like that, Stephen, but
I think one area, listen, if I was a coach of an NPC team, one area that I'd really ensure that my stocks were really, really strong is in my type five, especially having depth in that type five, because in a competition like the NPC, the attrition rate's always going to be high. You're going to have injuries. And I think it's important that you actually have a little bit of depth in the, have really real quality depth, in the front row, in that second row, especially, Paul. Because if you haven't got that platform, I don't know if you've got a lot. You can see some sides are struggling with their up front platform. I thought Counties Manukau were actually really worth their win. I actually just thought they dominated the physical exchanges. The scrum went pretty well. I thought they had a bit of dominance in there. And listen, I think they just played some really, really smart football. Probably one of the unsung heroes is Riley Hohepa at the moment, who just seems to be playing the game in the right places for his forward pack.
Yeah, and that's the difference in the two sides. Caleb Trask missed three kicks, two penalties in conversion, and that's eight points he left out there. Look, you can't say those 8 points would have won the game, but it would have put them in much better positions and removed a lot of the scoreboard pressure that they were under in that game. So yeah, Caleb Trask didn't have his best game. Normally a very good player. One last interview I want to do. If you want to, I did talk to the Rheon, the head coach of Counties. I'll put that on the New Zealand Sports Facebook page. I'm conscious of time, but I do want to just put in Nikolai Folakai's interview I had with him. It was his Blazer game. And this was after I talked to, you might remember, I did had an interview with Easy last weekend, or was it the weekend? Yeah, last weekend, with his around his Blazer game. So I thought it'd be nice to continue talking about Blazer games from Counties.
We are after Bay of Plenty versus Counties with Nikolai. This is your Blazer game. Yep. So what does it mean to get your Blazer for Counties?
Yeah, it's a huge privilege. This is my 30 in the team. Took a little while, you know, 3 years to get my Blazer, but this is where I got my first shot at NPC Rugby. I love the place, I love the union, so yeah, pretty special to get my Blazer today.
And look, this season you've gone close in a couple of games, gone both ways, and yeah, today was no exception. Mm. We had Easy also getting his Blazer, and I think another player last weekend. Mm. Are we seeing some of that kind of the fact that you guys have been around together, that sort of some of that connectivity, some of that sort of having time together is coming together now for the team?
Yeah, a little bit of that is coming through, but the coaches and the boys this year have been really working hard on connections, spending a lot of time together on and off the field. We've been working really hard on the field, smashing each other and stuff. So, yeah, it's starting to show. And, you know, we've still got a long way to go. So, yeah.
Well, yes, we're not quite halfway through the regular season, as you say. A long way to go, and hopefully finals footy as well for you guys. And what are the goals for you as well? Are you, outside of this, outside of NPC, further honours, what else are your, what are the other your kind of goals for you?
Yeah, obviously I'd like to, love to play professionally, wherever that is, wherever the opportunity is. But at the moment, my focus is on playing well for Counties, and just putting my best foot forward. If I play well for Counties, whatever comes will come, and yeah, I'll be ready.
And is it a good inspiration for players like Easy who have finally got their chance with Moana Pacifica, etc., that there's more opportunities there to encourage you on that journey?
Yeah, 100%. There's lots of opportunities out there. Especially now, you know, Moana and the other teams coming into the competition, but even overseas, other competitions as well. You know, I want to make this a living for myself, and that's the goal. So I'll focus on here now, see what happens.
Yep, and yeah. Having a good season with Counties, and things are going well. So all the best for you. Thank you so much, mate, for your time after the game. Cheers. And good luck for us.
Thanks for that, bro.
Cheers.
So we go, and obviously Major League Rugby, another place, opportunities overseas as well. So also, let's hope he does get himself a professional contract for next year. As you heard last weekend when I talked to Easy about this, how good it is to have that the ability just to concentrate in rugby, and how it improves rugby as well is a big thing. And probably one of the reasons why the reviewer you're seeing teams being consistent with the results is a lot of these players aren't full-time athletes, and also the squads are quite thin. If you lose a couple of players to injury, as Stephen said, you'll see big swings in results. But that rounds up our NPC action, and let's head over to the international games then. Australia versus South Africa. It was the first one on the menu on Saturday. Look, going into that one, South Africa were favourites, and yet they've not won in Australia for a number of years now. They've only won something like 4 games in Australia since they returned to the fold, or since professionalism, something like that. Sort of lines, can't remember exactly what the stat was, but I had a $10 free bet from the TAB, and I threw that onto the Wallabies at $2.60 and got myself $16 back. So as you say, Dave Rennie seems to have figured out how to beat the box, and another good result for them. They went out to a 10-0 lead, even though they did hold and then picked up that yellow card for Tom Wright. They always looked to be in the stronger position in this game, Stephen. It wasn't a sort of a cling in there and late comeback. They seemed to be in control of this game.
Yeah, exactly. And listen, what I was really, really impressed with was not just their start, but also their tenacity when the Springboks, you know, probably 10 minutes before halftime, you kind of wondered how they didn't score. Now, whether the Australians did that legally or illegally, there'll be obviously a lot of talk about that, and there's still talk going over about the antics of Nick White. But really, really and truthfully, that's a little bit of a side issue as far as I'm concerned, Paul. I think sometimes you've got to look at your own performance and what you're actually trying to achieve with actually so much ball. I think these guys just tried to bully them. But listen, I think there were opportunities for the Springboks to move it wide. We know that they're sharp on the outside, and on the one occasion that they actually did get the ball wide, it took an incredible, once again, tackle, whether it's legal or not legal, by Marika Kurabeti. And I've got to say, he did amazingly to actually even get to the player, but he actually, a lot of talk that he was actually tackled in the air, but his first contact was while the player was actually still on the ground. So, you know, in that respect, I think if South Africa actually look a little bit deeper, you know, did an official lose it for them? Probably not, Paul. At the end of the day, I think they've probably got to look at themselves. And one thing Australia did really, really well, they kind of negated some of the rush defence. I mean, say the second try that Fraser McWright yep. scored. That was and Lolisio got the offload off. Gee, that was a superb try because it basically caught out a lot of heavy forwards in that very, very tight area. And boy, that was a well constructed try. So no, credit to Australia. And I think at the end they'd probably just taken the foot off the pedal a bit, and they were still trying to play some expensive rugby. I suspect they were still trying to get that extra bonus point near the end, and in doing so they gave up some soft points, in my opinion.
And just to, on this, look, I think that Corbini's tackle was legal. That's my opinion. I've put it out there. I can understand where both people come from. I just don't agree with that point of view. On that one, was his head on the wrong side? Yes, it was dangerous from that point of view. It wasn't great tackle technique, but he got away with it. But on that one, the other one is Nick White. And okay, Sharp Brain said, isn't it White? Okay, heard he was airlifted to St. Patrick's Hospital in an emergency helicopter. Now, look. Nick White did definitely milk it, but I'm not a great fan of his antics. Was what Faf did illegal? Absolutely, he caught him in the face. Now, it doesn't matter how hard it was, that would have definitely broken his concentration or his ability to make the pass. So it's clearly a penalty. I would have been happy with just a penalty, but I understand where he's coming from. Came from with that yellow card. On that one. So there's been some good humour stuff when Nick White was walking through the airport, some South African fans did check out, we're in a bookshop and he was walking past and did call out and make sure that he was okay. They were scared for his well-being and how he was coping. He smiled through it and walked in. It was all in good humour there. I think the ref overall had a good game. Or at least a fine game, I think the some of the comments in social media from South African fans about the referee's performance are A, not correct, and B, damaging, dangerous to have that kind of language towards somebody who's doing their job. I think we need to we've talked about rugby values, and it'd be good if we could see some of that on social media. And towards referees,
Paul. I think there's a faction of South African supporters who are basically looked at this and said, "Listen, at the end of the day, the performance of the South African team is really not where it should be, and that should be the actual focus as opposed to if you're relying on a decision from an official." Well, to be honest, we could go round and round in circles.
Yeah, good point from Nocturne Rights. Lolisio had a good game, absolutely. I think someone that I think should have been given the shout ahead of James O'Connor over in Argentina and should have been, and definitely part of their future. I'd like to see him invested, trusted more and invested and say, look, you're the number two, not the number three on that one. So it's going to be interesting how the box bounced back from this one. I wouldn't be surprised if they won the next game and that we end up pretty much all square, every team with two wins after next round. This is a amazingly tight rugby championship. Yeah. The tightest there has ever been. An amazing competition from that point of view. And it's a shame that so much of the focus has been taken away from how close this competition is and is being focused on, from a New Zealand point of view, should the All Blacks coach still be there? From other teams' points of view, talking about referees, it'd be nice to actually concentrate on what is turning out to be a great tournament, and we're kind of missing out on that fact at the moment.
I totally agree. Who would have picked Argentina and Australia after this many rounds would be sitting on top of the table? I think it's fantastic, and it's absolutely wide open. You know, any one of these teams could basically win it at the end of the day. I think the weekend will have a little bit more of a an idea. If South Africa loses to Australia on the weekend, you could arguably say they're gone. And if the All Blacks lose to Argentina on the weekend, you could arguably say they could be gone as well. Who would have thought?
Absolutely. And South Africa fans are growing impatient with Neymar. Absolutely they are. We're seeing that on social media. When he made 14 changes for the Welsh game, that was seen as sort of good for the squad and all that kind of stuff. But I think he's coming back to bite him now. With this and that inconsistency of selection and some interesting calls. Now, obviously a lot of people say Malcolm Marx should start ahead of. I've gone blank as to the other player's name, but anyway, that's the third choice hooker. But it's just part of a long game that they're looking at the Rugby World Cup. And they're like, right, here's our third choice hooker. He hasn't had much experience this level. We need to give him experience in case we end up with this situation at the Rugby World Cup, needing him to play. So, boy, out you go there, boy. You get lots of game time and get experience. So, I think long term, it's not such a bad idea. Unfortunately, Springbok fans, like All Blacks fans, don't like losing. But no fans do particularly, but some are more accepting than others. Does Quagga Smith get a full game? Well, yeah, but unfortunately, Sia Khaleesi is the captain, has to start, and Peter Seftatoy is the World Player of the Year from a year ago. So you can't fit too many players to fit in.
Yeah, that sounds like another team with a similar predicament, Paul.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Well done, Wallabies. I say not what I expected to see. I think we've talked about the two main referee things from that one. Well done, Box. Oh, sorry, well done, the Wallabies. It's already been pointed out that the TAB or what are the odds coming up next weekend? Because as I say, the Wallabies were $2.60 going into that game. And now if we look forward to next weekend, currently Australia are again $2.15. So the Springboks are going into next weekend at $1.72. They're going in as favourites into that game, even though they've lost that one. And that's part of all this idea of having a how competitive this is. The reviewer expanded the tournament to 2012 to include Argentina has really paid off. Absolutely. Yep. This is the first time the Pumas, we'll get onto that actually, onto numbers about the next game, but absolutely has. So moving on then to the All Blacks game. This was a game of defences in that the Wallabies box game, tackle percentages were 80% and 88%. Heading into this game, the tackle percentages were 92% by the All Blacks and 96% by Argentina. Pretty much every single first up tackle was made. And when that's happening, you don't get over the gain line. You don't get clean breaks. And it becomes very difficult to do attacks. So whilst there's a lot of complaints around the All Blacks attack not working, to me, I think this was just down to two defences that were highly effective. And it's when that happens, discipline and the kicking boot tend to win the day, Stephen.
Oh, definitely. And listen, Argentina are a little bit like South Africa. You know, it's like that can. It's already got the instructions on it. You know what you're going to get. You are going to have to roll your sleeves up and get into a physical battle up front. And I thought the All Blacks, for a good part of that game, through the first half and part of the second half, had the right tactics of basically taking them on, using runners, cleaning, and moving them around. Because what they were getting, even earlier in the game, they were getting a lot of infractions from Los Pumas. Where it got a bit dicey for the All Blacks is when they actually started moving the ball a little bit wide, and I actually thought it actually played more into the Argentinians' defensive pattern, where you'd basically taken a lot of those players out of the ground and forced them to, I never thought I'd say that, but you actually forced them to basically defend in narrow channels and bring people in. And if you look at the try, if you look at the try that the All Blacks scored from range, was it Caleb Clark? You know, that try was basically scored because they were able to pull a lot of people in and get people into space, even though that was from a turnover lineout, ironically. But it just kind of showed you, it took that defensive screen that had been so strong away from Argentina, and also some, probably it was pretty odd to change your whole front row so early in the piece. Usually, you know, that's the sort of thing we see around about the 50th to the 60th minute, Paul. So that was a little weird.
It was strange, wasn't it? 4 minutes into the second half, we had a kick already in that time as well. So half the time we were stood around waiting for kicks to take place. And you're like, well, they've only had about 2 minutes game time. If you want to make that change, why didn't you do it at half time? Why wait 4 minutes into the half? That seemed a very strange one to me to do that. So interesting idea or position there on that one. The All Blacks had all the territory, all the possession, twice as many run meters as the Pumas, but they just couldn't break down what was a cracking defense. There's been interesting something on Twitter who was looking at the attack shape of the All Blacks and what might Joe Smith be trying to do. Now, one of the things that Joe Smith did when he first went to Ireland was to say, right, no offloads. I want quick. There are two ways of getting quick ball. One is via offloads, and the other one is by quick rucks. Now, if you want to have a quick ruck and want to ruck quickly, then you cannot be in a position to offload because you've run past the ruck. If you're trying to get quick ball from rucks, basically say we're not doing offloads, which is definitely not a style that All Blacks fans are used to, particularly with people like Sonny Bill Williams, Jack Goodhue, who are great players at getting the offloads out. So that was something that we saw. We didn't see many offloads in this game from the All Blacks, and we also saw the dual playmaker thing: Jordy going out one side and Richard Moranga going out the other side. And so something that's been derided when it was DMAC and Bowden, it looks like it's been tried again by Joe Schmidt here. So some interesting things there that will go against what a lot of All Blacks think as being a lot of All Blacks fans, sorry, think as being the All Blacks style. So whilst everyone's seeing Joe Schmidt as being the saviour, pardon me, it'll be interesting to see how much of that continues, Stephen, when people actually sort of pick apart this All Blacks attack plan.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, like you said before, I think sometimes you've got to pick your times to attack. And if you're going to get into an arm wrestle sometime, whilst you want to appease your public and play an open style of game, you know, I also thought there were opportunities there for I thought there was opportunities to actually take penalty kicks at goal. They turned down a couple. You just got to keep that scoreboard ticking over. It's as simple as that, you know. And even there were drop kick opportunities as well, for crying out loud, you know, these win games. It's as simple as that. And whilst the All Blacks scored 2-1, at the end of the day, it came down to some really accurate goal kicking by Buffelli, who just did not look like missing Paul.
No, 100% kicking from him, whereas Richard Mwanga missed three. Or actually, was it two for Richard Mwanga and one for Geordie, I think, maybe? Yeah, Geordie missed one and Richard Mwanga missed two. So 8 points left out there, which would have made it 26-25. Now, look, this doesn't all doesn't necessarily mean that's how the game would have gone. Yeah, I mean, something that Boa has talked about is this, that lack of focus on goal kickers in New Zealand when trying to pick your 10. It's not seen as being one of the most important things. It came to show that it is at the weekend. Sharp brain Joe Smith also looked to be clueless, a bit harsh after he's only been with them for 2 training sessions. Mm-hmm. We'll see how this happens. Now, there's been lots of already about last weekend, so I think I'd rather look forward rather than backwards because, Stephen, after a win here, the All Blacks, I could see, basically of ringing the changes, giving players like Topu Va'ai, RTS, game time, maybe even Dalton Papali'i, because we can't expect Sam Kane to play every single game the All Blacks season. Having lost, can Ian Foster afford to? Does he have leeway now to make lots of changes, or does he have to roll out his supposed first team to prove that he didn't make selection errors in this game?
I have a funny feeling he's gonna roll out the same team, because I think there were areas of this game they were actually really, really good. Probably somebody like Cody Taylor might be in danger of keeping his spot on the bench. But I can actually see them picking the same side for some reason. It's probably a really, really important game for this team in terms of the championship. And I don't think there's actually any scope to basically experiment too much, Paul. I think they'll pretty much stick to the same team, and unfortunately Roger Tuivasa-Sheck won't be making an appearance in the black jersey, although I do believe he might have been pulled out of that Auckland game in NPC on the weekend, so who knows.
Yeah, look, to me, this I think there needs to be changes, more just for long term. I mean, this side has effectively played now. I mean, there have been changes. Don't get me wrong. It's not the exact same team, as this is the first time that the All Blacks have played the exact same team back to back. But essentially, you've played the same team, or the first choice team, for 5 games on the bounce now. 3 against Ireland, 2 against, sorry, 6 games. 3 against Ireland, 2 against Springboks, and now against the Pumas as well. And I just think the players need a break. And that a few other players like, Aaron Smith, Sam Whitelock, just do need a break and do need some to well yeah do, and we'll see what happens whether he can do that or not with this loss. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. So there's an article that Aaron Goyle does the stuff, which is look at the key numbers after each of these games. So I just want to run through what he did, and because there are some interesting numbers. Obviously, it was the first ever win by the Pumas in New Zealand. I also mentioned it was the first time that they've won back-to-back games in the Rugby Championship either, also by the Pumas. The All Blacks have now lost three consecutive tests at home for the first time in their 119-year history. This has never happened before. So another record for Ian Foster on that one. There has been two losses and a draw run in 1949 to 1950. But that's obviously, that's before my memory. The All Blacks have lost four tests this year. They've only twice lost more than that. They lost five in 1998, three to Australia, South Africa, and six in 1949, four to South Africa and two to Australia. So, again, massive. We're only one win away from that. We've got Argentina in Hamilton, followed by Australia in Melbourne and Auckland, then Japan, Wales, Scotland, and England. And relatively speaking, that is a relatively easy Northern Hemisphere tour. There's no Ireland, there's no France in there. Obviously, England, I would suggest, is the hardest one at HQ in that final game. But to go through that, to go through the rest of those games with no more losses, wow. It's starting to look unlikely. Mm. And let's be honest with that one. Also, that loss in Christchurch broke a 15-game winning streak in Christchurch for the All Blacks well. Oh, and Aaron Smith, that was his 100th start for the All Blacks. So congratulations to him. Hats up there. Tony Woodcock, Dan Carter, Sam Whitelock, Kieran Reid, and Richie McCaw are the only other players who have started 100 test matches or more for the All Blacks. stats for you. Thank you, Aaron, on stuff for those. Anything else, Stephen?
No, I think we've covered it off. I suppose the only good news for New Zealand and All Black supporters was the New Zealand Sevens team winning the LA Sevens, probably their first tournament win in probably maybe a couple of years, I think, Paul, if I stand corrected. So congratulations to them, but not much else to write home about. But listen, from a holistic point of view, just on the test, I actually really enjoyed it. I enjoyed both tests on the weekend. And if you're looking at it from a holistic point of view, boy, isn't it good for international rugby. You know, who would have thought that, you know, probably the team that's got such a great legacy would be struggling. The world champions, Springbok team, are basically struggling at the moment. But I think the one thing the Springboks have got going, we know that they are a very, very good tournament team. Ironically, probably also a team that's beaten the All Blacks in Hamilton as well, Shark Brain too. So thanks for just reminding us of that occurrence a few seasons ago. And you know, I just think it's a good thing, and we can't get too hung up about it. A lot of these teams have really improved big time, and we've seen incremental improvements over the last two or three years from not just the Pumas, but you know, I suspect we're seeing that improvement with Northern Hemisphere teams like Scotland and Wales. You know, I thought Wales did pretty well in South Africa. And listen, I certainly don't want to sound offensive to our South African viewers. You know, while South Africa are the current World Cup champions at the moment, make no mistake about that, I don't think they're probably the benchmark at the moment, Paul. You'd have to say probably France and Ireland are the benchmark. And also, boy, Argentina have just gone and thrown a spanner in the works. But let's not forget Scotland played out a really good series against Argentina as well not so long ago. So it just shows you that they have improved. One thing I will say about South Africa, though, going into the World Cup, boy, they are a tournament team. They know how to get themselves up for tournament, and they know how to grind when it counts. So going into a World Cup, I would never write South Africa off, regardless of who's coaching them. I mean, to say, let's think about it. They were probably in disarray 18 months out from the last Rugby World Cup and completely turned it around. Compliments of Rassie Erasmus. So I've just got too much respect for the Springboks to totally totally write them off. I mean, to say the way things are playing out there at the moment, the All Blacks are either looking at Ireland or South Africa in a quarterfinal, and that won't be easy.
Look, I just, whilst good on you to put the Pumas up there. I think, look, Ireland and France are the benchmark at the moment. The Pumas are able to pull off or produce results, but they don't have the consistency at the moment. As we've seen, they lost to the Wallabies and then beat them there. So, look, I don't think we can put the Pumas up there as a benchmark team at the moment. I think the benchmark is Ireland and France up there. You've got a whole bunch of teams in that crowd, of including New Zealand, South Africa, Argentina, England, Scotland, Wales, who on their day can beat pretty much anybody and can cause ups. But they don't have the consistency of performance in the same way that Ireland and France do.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
I was going to back up your comment about Wales. I thought Wales were going to go down to South Africa and get absolutely thumped and beaten up in that series. But boy, oh boy, they didn't. They were competitive throughout the three games and obviously got their first ever win down there against, admittedly, a much changed Springboks team in that second test. But still, you can only play the side that the opposition selects against you. You can't control that. And I think Wales had far-seeded expectations in that series against South Africa. Thank you, everybody. Look, I've got a new guest for next weekend. Next Monday. So look out for that one, folks. Hope you all stay safe. Have a great week. Thank you so much for your support and for watching, as we do appreciate you guys dialing in on a Monday at 8 p.m. to have a chat. Now, you can always dial into @DrivingMall on Twitter, or Stephen is on Twitter as well, and have a chat to us during games. I've forgotten what your handle is, Stephen.
I've forgotten what my handle is as well, but it's @Stephen73_H. That's @Stephen73_H.
There we go. 73 isn't a reference to the year he was born in, so I don't know what that's all about.
But listen, if you want to contact me and have a chat, I'm always up for me, and I'm always sort of posting something maybe a little bit controversial every now and again, so you can agree or disagree with me, and it'd basically be great to get some feedback.
Okay, so actually, here we go then. As we've just been asked, can Argentina beat New Zealand back-to-back? So two tests this weekend. First up, the All Blacks versus Argentina in Hamilton. Your prediction, sir?
You asking me that?
Yep, you go first. I've got mine in my head already.
I think the All Blacks will come back with a strong performance. I think the All Blacks by 12 and over.
I'm going All Blacks by 7, and that's followed by the Wallabies versus the Springboks. Your prediction for that one?
Springboks to bounce back emphatically.
Emphatically? Wow.
Yep.
I don't see the Springboks as being an emphatic scoring team. Don't take that the wrong way. So I've got the, again, Springboks by 5. So there we go, folks. I think we will be every team on 2 wins and 2 losses at the after next weekend. We'll have to wait and see on that one. Don't forget, there is also NPC action on a Wednesday night. There is some midweek action in the Old Rugby with Canterbury versus North Harbour. And also we'll be back on Wednesday at 8 p.m. with the standoff show, some NRL action. So thank you, everybody. Thank you, Stephen. It's been a cracker. Catch you all next Monday.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.